We're reading from Bhagavad Gita, chapter 1, verses 27 and 28. Do we chant the Sanskrit in this class? Okay, so we'll chant verse 27. Tan samiksha sakam teya Sarvan bandha navastitan Kripaya pariyavista Visidanidamabhavid Tan samiksha sakunteya Sarvan bandha navastitan Kripaya paraya vishta Vishidani dhamma pravid Chant Tan samiksha sakonteya Sarvan bandhu navastitam Kripaya paraya vishto Vishidan idam abhavit Ladies Tan samiksha sukanteya Sarvam bantu navastitam Kripaya paraya vishto Vishidan idama bravid Tan All of them Samiksha After seeing Sa He Kaunteya The son of Kunti Sarvan All kinds of Bandhun relatives Avastitan situated Kripaya by compassion Paraya of a high grade Avista overwhelmed Vishidan while lamenting Idam thus Abhavid spoke. When the son of Kunti, Arjuna, saw all these different grades of friends and relatives, he became overwhelmed with compassion and spoke thus. Arjuna Uvacha Tishtve Mam Swajanam Krishna Yutsam Samupashtitam Siranti Mammagatrani Mukham Cha Parishyati Arjuna said, My dear Krishna, seeing my friends and relatives present before me in such a fighting spirit, I feel the limbs of my body quivering and my mouth drying up. Purport. Any man who has genuine devotion to the Lord has all the good qualities which are found in godly persons or in the demigods. Whereas the non-devotee, however advanced he may be in material qualifications by education and culture, lacks in godly qualities. As such, Arjuna, just after seeing his kinsmen, friends, and relatives on the battlefield, was at once overwhelmed by compassion for them who had so decided to fight amongst themselves. As far as his soldiers were concerned, he was sympathetic from the beginning, but he felt compassion even for the soldiers of the opposite party, foreseeing their imminent death. And while he was so thinking, the limbs of his body began to quiver and his mouth became dry. He was more or less astonished to see their fighting spirit. Practically the whole community, all blood relatives of Arjuna, had come to fight with him. This overwhelmed a kind devotee like Arjuna. Although it is not mentioned here, still one can easily imagine not only were Arjuna's bodily limbs quivering and his mouth drying up, but he was also crying out of compassion. Such symptoms in Arjuna were not due to weakness, but due to his soft-heartedness, a characteristic of a pure devotee of the Lord. It is said, therefore, yasyasti bhaktir bhagavati kinchana sarvai gunaistatta samasate sraha harava bhaktasya kuto mahakuna manoratena stita vatabhi. One who has unflinching devotion for the personality of Godhead has all the good qualities of the demigods. But one who is not a devotee of the Lord has only material qualifications that are of little value. This is because he's hovering on the mental plane and is certain to be attracted by the glaring material energy. Bhagavatam 5:18-12. Mukham karoti vachalam pangam langhate girim yakipam tamam vande shi gurum jinitaranam om agyana tivirandasya gyananjala shalakaya Shakshamani Tamyena Dasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So Arjuna is described by Srila Prabhupada as a soft-hearted devotee. So a soft-hearted devotee, he does not see the bad qualities of others. He sees only the good qualities. So on the other side, fighting against him were people who had given poison to his brother Bhima. They had set their house on fire. They had insulted Draupadi in the Asat Sabha, or the assembly of very low-class men. And they had cheated them out of their kingdom in gambling and sent them to the forest for 13 years. So these were the people that he was forgiving. He was looking at them with compassion. And he was forgetting all of the bad qualities. He was forgetting all of the offenses that they had done against him. So forgiveness is a Vaishnava quality. And Arjuna was certainly a great Vaishnava. But Arjuna's service to Krishna was as a Kshatriya. And Kshatriyas don't forgive. So all of the different Varnas, Kshatriyas, Brahmanas, Vaishyas, Shudras, they all have one beautiful quality. The beautiful quality of the Brahmanas is forgiveness, not of the Kshatriyas. Can anybody tell me what is the beauty of the Kshatriyas? Fighting, yes. He's heroism, not retreating from the battle. That is the beauty of a Kshatriya. And the Vaishyas, what is their beauty? What is their good quality? Well, yeah, that could be good or bad. Resourcefulness is actually for Kshatriyas, but Vaishyas do certainly have that quality. But Yeah, that's one of them. Very good. Cow protection. And because their goal is to make money, they're for charity, for enriching cultural activities. So that's the beauty of the Vaishyas. And the beauty of the Shudras is to be faithful in discharge of their duties to their master. So Arjuna was seeing the faults in his own occupation as a Kshatriya. A Kshatriya, if he was challenged to fight, he could not refuse. Now in this case, the fight was against his grandfather, his guru. He had to kill his guru, his grandfather, and his cousins, and all his relatives. So this was, even the Kshatriya had, sometimes they would fight against their sons and their brothers. This was the, they could not refuse a fight. So this was the fault. This is one of the faults of the duties of the Kshatriya. Another problem with the Kshatriya's life is that they broke all the four regulative principles that we follow as Vaishnavas. We have no illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling, no meat eating. So the Kshatriya had to accept any woman that would come to him for sex life. And then he had to marry her, actually. Any woman that would come to a Kshatriya, he would have to give her shelter. So just like when Bhima was in the forest, and when Rakshasa came to eat him, first he sent his sister, Hidimba, to go and see who was there. for his meal. Hidimba had a sister named Hidimba, and she went there and she fell in love with Bhima. So instead of eating him in her fierce form, she transformed herself to a beautiful woman, and she begged him to marry her. So Bhima was not attracted, but his mother Kunti said, "No, you have to marry her because this is your duty as a Kshatriya." So that's one example that they have to accept any woman that approaches. Again, Yayati, he was a great king, and he married Devayani, and along with her came Sharmishta, on the condition that she would not be married to him. But actually, when Sharmishta approached Yayati, then he had to accept her as his wife. And actually, her son Puru became the emperor of the world. And then again, meat eating, they would eat meat and sacrifice, horse sacrifice. Intoxication, the outer dynasty was destroyed by intoxication. And gambling, Yudhisthira could not refuse. If you're challenged to gambling, you cannot refuse. So these are some of the faults of the Kshatriyas. Of course, the main fault of the Kshatriyas is they must kill people. And the fault of the Brahmanas is that they used to perform animal sacrifices, so they would have to kill animals. The fault of the Vaishyas is that they have to lie. They say, "For you, I am not making any profit." But we know that they're making a lot of profit. And they have to hide. They sometimes on the black market, they have to work on the black market. They have to hide their income from the tax guy. And so these are the problems of the Vaishyas. And the Shudras sometimes have to serve a bad master. So Arjuna was disturbed because he had to perform a duty that seemingly was full of fault, a service that had faults mixed in it. So how can Kshatriyas or anyone live in this world and advance in spiritual life while performing such conflicting duties? And so he was here in a dilemma. So Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita later on, in the 18th chapter, to Arjuna, Sahajam karma konteya sadosham abhina tejet savaram bahidoshena tumena agnirivavritaha. Every endeavor is covered by some fault, just as fire is covered by smoke. Therefore, one should not give up the work born of his nature, even if such work is full of fault. So fire is pure. It's considered a very pure element, but sometimes it's covered with smoke. But just because smoke is there, it doesn't make the fire impure. So we have to use the fire, even though the smoke may be there and it may be a fault of the fire. So Arjuna was proposing that he give up the work of a Kshatriya, instead perform the work of a Brahmana. But that doesn't mean that there won't be some problem, even if he becomes a Brahmana and gives up his duty as a Kshatriya. So Prabhupada explained that one should not give up his natural occupation just because there's some faults or some disturbing elements. Rather, you should be determined to serve Krishna by your occupational duty. So one time, Srila Prabhupada was giving a class in India, Hyderabad. And one Indian man raised his hand and said, "Swamiji, you said that Arjuna is a pure devotee. But I think Arjuna is not a pure devotee, because after he heard the whole Bhagavad Gita and he was fighting in the battle of Kurukshetra, and his son died and he was lamenting. So because he's lamenting, therefore he's not a pure devotee." So Srila Prabhupada said to him, "No, even though he said lamenting is natural, this is a human emotion. It's natural for anyone in this world to lament when their child dies." He said, "But the proof that he's a pure devotee is that even though his son was killed on the battlefield, he did not give up his service. He did not say, 'Okay, that's it, I'm quitting, I'm going home. My son has died, I'm not fighting anymore.' No, he kept on fighting, and he fought even more furiously the next day to get the person who killed his son. He had to go through the whole army of the gurus." So Arjuna was actually a pure devotee. But Krishna, we'll see later on, he will not approve of this attitude of Arjuna of forgiveness. He does not approve of this attitude of becoming a Brahmin and being forgiving. Arjuna is a devotee, so he naturally wants to excuse offenses, especially against his relatives. So Arjuna may excuse, but Krishna will not excuse. Srila Prabhupada said in a lecture on these verses of Gita, Arjuna was saying, let them be excused. And Krishna said, no, you must fight and you must kill them. They made offense and I don't forgive them. And I want you to fight for me, according to my desire. So Srila Prabhupada said, if you want to please Krishna, you have to be prepared to fight and maybe even kill your so-called relatives. Of course, we're not Kshatriyas here, so we don't have to worry about that one. Fortunately, there are hardly any Kshatriyas alive these days. Actually, there are some. In the 1994, there were some Nepali Gurkhas who were fighting in the Iraq war. I think that war is still going on, actually, since 1994. But it started in that year. And so the British, there were some British people there also, commanders, and they knew how courageous these Gurkhas were. So they proposed to them, okay, we're going to drop you from the airplane into the enemy territory. So how many of you volunteer to go into the enemy territory? So 50% raised their hands. And the commander was puzzled because, you know, they're very courageous. Why? What happened to the other 50%? So then he asked the other 50%, now why don't you want to go? They said, well, we are afraid if you drop us from the airplane, we'll die. They said, no, we'll give you parachutes. Don't worry. So then they all raised their hands. Half of them are willing to jump from the plane. Parachutes, yeah. So 50% were ready to jump from the airplane without a parachute into the enemy territory. No problem. The other 50%, they volunteered also after they got their parachutes. Now, this was the nature of the Kshatriyas. Even nowadays, it's still there. It's still alive in some people, not many. So, therefore, Arjuna, he's not supposed to be forgiving. He's supposed to be ready to fight. And Krishna was not forgetting the offenses of Duryodhana and the crews, especially to Draupadi. When all these offenses were being committed, Lord Krishna actually tolerated the insult to Draupadi, as well as insults to himself. So the question may be raised, well, why did Krishna tolerate all these injustices by the crews and insults right in his presence? Why didn't he chastise the crews immediately? When Draupadi was insulted, they were trying to take her clothes off to see her naked. The Lord protected her by giving her limited clothing. But he didn't chastise the other party right away. They were insulting. This is a great insult, chaste lady. So the silence of Krishna did not mean he excused their offenses, but he didn't chastise them because there were so many kings on the earth and they were all a big burden. And Prabhupada said he wanted to get them all together in one place and make a shortcut in his killing business. So now in the battlefield of Kurukshetra, everybody's there and Krishna wants to get them all together and kill them all at once. To make a shortcut, his mission was Pariktanaya Sadhanam Vinashaya Chadushkitam. He came to protect the devotee and to annihilate the miscreants. So before the battle, Krishna actually tried. He was sent as a messenger to stop the war. And he went to Duryodhana, but Duryodhana said, I will not give any land, even as much land as will fit through the eye of a needle. Not even that much. And they were only asking for 5 villages, even though they were emperors of the world. They would be satisfied, but no, he wouldn't give anything. So after leaving the crews, Krishna went to offer obeisances to Kunti and asked her if she had any message for her sons. This was before the battle. So she gave a message that is worthy of a Kshatriya queen. First she said to Yudhisthira, your stock of pious credits will steadily decrease as long as you allow yourself to remain like a mendicant, because they were living in the forest. Your excessive compassion, weakness of heart, and overall mildness are not befitting a Kshatriya. So she did not approve of this attitude of forgiveness, compassion. She called it weakness of heart, just like Krishna will do in the next chapter. It is your duty to fight for regaining your kingdom. The impotence you are now showing was never desired by Pandu, that's his father, Bhishma, his grandfather, or myself, your mother. So don't bring infamy upon our dynasty in this way. Instead, you should rescue your poor mother from humiliating life of having to live on the mercy of others. You are meant for ruling over the Kuru kingdom. If you do so, you'll receive great benefit, as will those whom you govern. So that was her message to Yudhisthira. To Arjuna, she said, please remember how a voice from the sky announced at the time of your birth that you would become equal to Indra in prowess. After defeating all the Kurus and regaining your father's kingdom, you would perform three great sacrifices. So that was her message to Bhima, to Arjuna. Then to Bhima Nakula Sahadev, she said, now is the time for you to show your strength. Remember all the insults you had to tolerate, especially Dushasana's words in the assembly. He said to Draupadi while dragging her by the hair, now you've been won by us, you are our slave. At this time, Bhima was so angry, it looked like flames and smoke were coming from his eyes, his ears, his nose, and his mouth. So Kunti is reminding them why they should fight. And so that was the spirit of the Kshatriyas. The spirit of the Kshatriyas. Now Arjuna is forgetting his mother's words and the suffering of Draupadi. Why is he hesitating to fight? In the verse 25, previous verse, Arjuna said, verse 21, he said, let me see who I must fight with here in this battle. So Krishna is Rishikesh. He knows past, present, future. He knew why Arjuna wants to see with whom he must fight. He wants to see because he's hesitating to fight. No need. Why do you have to see who's there? He wants to see because he's hesitating. He's calculating materialistically. If I fight, how will I enjoy? How will they enjoy? What will there be in it for me? Just like Duryodhana was always calculating, so Arjuna now is hesitating to do his service for Krishna. He says, if I do my service, then how can I enjoy? There will be nobody to enjoy with. I'll kill everybody. Then who can I show my opulence to? Who can I show off to? Who can I share my opulence with, my family? And then if I do this service, I will get sinful reaction. He'll give all these arguments now. And then, if one kills the elders of the family, there will be destruction of the dynasty. So sometimes we also hesitate to do our service. It's not as difficult as Arjuna's, though sometimes it may seem that difficult, like Arjuna's. He had to kill his guru and his grandfather and his relatives. So we hesitate because we also calculate, you know, what is it in for me? How will I eat? How will I sleep? How will I be comfortable in this life? Is this making me go beyond my comfort zone? I need this, I need that. And someone asks us to do some service, sometimes we give many reasons why we hesitate to do it. In India, when we go to make life members, they say, well, when Krishna will give me the inspiration, then I will become a life member. So they say, it's not the will of Krishna right now that I do service for Krishna. And so this is one of the arguments we hear. Or sometimes they look for divine signals. Maybe when Krishna will pick up the pen, put it in my hand, I will sign the check. And so Achyutananda was one time talking to Srila Prabhupada, and he said, most people, this is in India, people say to us, well, you Americans, you've already enjoyed sense gratification. Now you are, that's why you can become devotees now, because you already enjoyed. So Prabhupada said, well, if that's the truth, the hog would be the first class devotee, because he enjoys the most, without caring for mother, sister, or daughter. So no, it's not first enjoy, and then, yes, you have to go. First we have to go to America and make lots of money, and then we can enjoy, or even go to London and make lots of money. So Baba says, yes, we will enjoy, have our sense gratification. Then later, when we become old and useless, we will become devotees of Krishna, and we will renounce everything. But it doesn't usually happen, even when they're old and useless. So Prabhupada said, no, if you put ghee on the fire, it will increase, it will not decrease. So Krishna here, he's the chariot driver of Arjuna. Arjuna is hesitating to fight. But one of the names of Arjuna is Godakesha. that he's beyond the darkness of ignorance. He even was fighting in the dark. One time, when he was eating his meal at night, then the lights went out, they didn't have electricity, but they had lamps or so. So the lamp went out, and then he just continued eating even in the dark. And then he got the realization, well, if I can eat in the dark, I can shoot in the dark. I can practice my archery in the dark. So then he didn't sleep anymore. He just was practicing at night as well. Day and night, he was practicing his shooting. Therefore, he's called Buddha Kesha. So why is he becoming overwhelmed with material thoughts here? Srila Prabhupada explains, because by the will of Rishikesh, he played like an ordinary man affected by family affection. So Krishna became his chariot driver just to give him the proper direction on the battlefield. So now Krishna is here ready to direct him, and Arjuna wants to give up the fighting. So in one purport in the first chapter, Prabhupada said, Krishna is Paramatma, present everyone as a supreme guidance. So he's already the chariot driver and counsel of all living beings. When he therefore exhibits himself as chariot driver of Arjuna, there's no change in his exalted position. It is the power of devotional service only that demonstrates him as the chariot driver. So Arjuna's devotional service was so powerful that he could reveal Krishna came out. Krishna is in our heart, he's our chariot driver. It says in the 18th chapter, Ishvara Sarvabhutanam, he's directing us, giving us intelligence. And so, therefore, we should not hesitate to surrender to him. He's always there. And why do we hesitate? Because sometimes we become overwhelmed by illusion, dvanda moha, duality. It means, I think I should enjoy, or maybe should I get married, or should I remain single, or should I do this vow, or should I not do this vow, or should I fast on Ekadashi, or should I just eat grain, not eat grains and fruits. So sometimes these questions come up, should I do this or not, or should I go out and have an ice cream, or whatever. I think you have ice cream here, so it's not a problem. But in the old days in India, there was nothing in the temple. And sometimes the thoughts would come, should I go out and have a juice or something? So this is a bit dictation of Maya. And when we become devotees, before we become devotees, there are so many Mayas trying to get us. Why don't go to the temple? You just stay home and be comfortable. Why you want to get up early for Mangalarti? It is dark, and well, now it's not dark, but and these four regulative principles, that is very difficult. And so at one point I was teaching Bhakti Shastri, and some of the people in the class were saying, why four? Why not three regulative principles? There was a time, I think 10 years ago, when that was happening. And so we had to convince them about that. So this is Maya. We try to escape. But we're in the prison of Maya, and when we try to escape, all the sirens go off. So Maya is always telling us that, this is very difficult. Why are you doing this? Devotional service. So therefore, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has come. When you have Gorni Tai here, he's made it very easy. Very simple process. No rules or regulations. You just chant the holy name of Krishna and be happy. So Lord Krishna has come in this age of Kali just to give us himself in the form of the holy name. We're so fortunate. He's also come here in the form of Bhagavad Gita. This book speaks to us even now. Although he spoke 5,000 years ago to Arjuna, same instructions are good for us even now, that we should not hesitate. And there is one verse in Bhagavad Gita that Srila Prabhupada translates, part of the verse, don't hesitate. And that verse is Sarvadharmam Prityaja Mamekam Sharanam Vraja. You abandon, give up all your varieties of religiousness, means different ideas, occupations, that just surrender to me. Don't hesitate. And don't think just because you're giving up your other engagements, there will be some flaw in your life. There will be no flaw. So don't think like that. I'll give you all protection. So this is Krishna's promise to us in Bhagavad Gita. You just give up everything and just follow me. And I will take care of you so there won't be any reaction to your work. So do not hesitate. Mashinchaha. Accept me. So it's not simply for Arjuna, it is for us also to accept. Whatever level we're on, we should try to take the next step in our advancement in spiritual life. If we are just visiting the temple, we can start chanting, we can start following the four guiding principles. If we're initiated, then mostly we're in the Bhajana Kriya level or Anartanavritti, where we're sometimes struggling with the senses or struggling to make advancement. And so we should try to take the next step in our spiritual life. It's different for different people. The next step in surrender. And so the whole purpose of Bhagavad Gita is to convince us to surrender to Krishna, just like Arjuna was convinced. And so the next time you're hesitating to do some service, then think about Krishna's words, Mashicha, don't worry, don't hesitate. I'll take care of everything and I'll protect you. Don't worry, there won't be some lacking in your choice, in your service. So we'll stop here. Any questions? Yes.
You mentioned about that they were asking why four engagements.
Yeah.
Which was one? Was it
one? No, this is six.
I'm sorry.
Question is that I mentioned that there was a time in our movement. I had a Bhakti Shastri class when half of the students were saying, why not three instead of four? So she asked which one of the four they didn't want to follow, and that was the no illicit sex. No illicit sex one. Yeah.
Who was that? Who didn't want to follow that?
Some of the students in my class.
What? They're still students.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Honestly.
No, they were telling, they were asking me, why four? Why not three? Because at that point, one of our leaders had left and started preaching in that way. So then they didn't want to leave. They wanted to stay in ISKCON. So they wanted to actually know the truth of why four, why not three? And so then I had to explain why. In yoga practice, it's necessary. If you want to have determination, then celibacy is necessary. And grihastha life is allowed, but also with rules and regulations. Married life is allowed, also with some rules and regulations. So that you can have your married life at the same time advance in spiritual life. In other disciplines, this is not allowed. In the yogic, the Ashtanga yoga, you have to have strict celibacy. In the impersonalist path, you can't have to be a sannyasi. You can't get married. But in the bhakti path, it's so powerful that even marriage is allowed. And it's a type of yoga, and you can make advancement in spiritual life. Yeah, we have a question?
Yes, thank you. It's very inspiring class.
Thank you.
When you described the almost a mandate of the Kshatriyas, or the duty of the Kshatriyas, not to refuse a woman.
Right.
Approaches them,
yeah.
And also not to refuse a provocation for a fight.
Right.
What about Kshatriya women? Are they also obliged by the same?
No. 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 They don't get challenged to fight or gamble or have husbands. They have different. Although they were trained up when Krishna kidnapped Rukmini, Prabhupada described Rukmini was driving the chariot. She knew how to drive a chariot. She knew how to drive. So they were trained up, and it was Draupadi. When she was married to the Pandavas, then she was the accountant, the treasurer. She knew all of the expenses and everything. She was the temple commander, so to speak. That she knew all the servants, and she 100,000, she knew all their names and all their problems. They had problems, they would come to her. She knew all the men servants, all the maid servants, all the cowherds. She knew all the money. She was the accountant, she was the treasurer, she was in charge of temple commander, prasad distribution. She would serve thousands of Brahmins every day. So she had her duties like a queen. It wasn't just an ordinary life to be the emperor's wife. So she had, you know, duties just like the emperor. And she was the only one who knew the amount of money he had. Nobody, they didn't even know how much they had. She knew. She was the accountant of the treasury. Radha Krishna. And she knew all these things. Yeah.
I just wanted to also ask a question about the qualities, like this beautiful quality of Kshatriya, or this resisting in the fight, and and also like a fault. But there is a pastime that always touches my heart, was King Shibi, when he was protecting the pigeon, and he allowed to eat his body. So what quality is this?
Protection. The duty of the Kshatriya is to give protection to all the citizens, praja. So citizens include not only the human beings, but the animals, the trees, and all the citizens. They were also citizens of the country. Just so that's why we see Parikshit protecting the cow from Kali. Yeah, so it was his duty to protect the pigeon. Anyone who takes shelter of a Kshatriya. So the example was also given of Yudhisthira at the end of his life, when dog came to take shelter of him at the end of his life. And when it was time for him to go to heaven, Yudhisthira said, no, I won't go because this dog has taken shelter. And I won't go without the dog. They said, well, dogs aren't allowed in heaven. You can't take the dog. He said, no, okay, then I won't go. This dog has taken shelter of me, so if he doesn't go, I don't go. And the dog was actually Yamaraj's father testing him.
Yamaraj's?
He took the his father was Yamaraj, and he came in the form of a dog to test him. He came like that, just to test his son, Yudhisthira. So there, another duty. They had many duties. I didn't tell all the duties. Another duty was to protect the citizens, including praja. Prabhupada said the word praja, citizen, means animals as well. That was one of their duties. Just like children, they had to protect their citizens. Yeah, so he was... That was the quality of protection, the duty of the Kshatriya, to protect. Not only did they have to protect them physically, but also from lust. They had to protect them spiritually and lead them on the spiritual path. They had to protect them from... Actually, in Lord Ram's time... And even in Yudhisthira's time, there is no excessive heat, no excessive cold, and nobody's children died before the father. And if somebody's child died before his father, then the king was held responsible for that. You must have done something sinful, otherwise my child would not have died before me. So he was held responsible if there was any fault in the kingdom like that. That was, we saw that in Dwarka, where the Brahmana's sons died, and he went to chastise Ugrasena. That why has my child, why have my children died at birth? You must have done something sinful. It's your fault. So the king was chastised if anything like that happened in his kingdom. Because the king was, they were so responsible. They were responsible for the seasons. They're responsible for nobody should, you know. First the father and mother should die, and then the children when they get old. Nobody should die young. And they would respond. That was the protection of the king. It was so huge. Yeah.
It's very interesting when you look at the Aztec, the Olmec, the Mayan, the Incans, the Sumerians, the
Canaanites.
They all had that notion. The Egyptians.
Well, the Vedic culture was all over the world at the time of Yudhisthira. It was the one culture. One scripture, one mantra, one God. It was all over the world at the time of Yudhisthira. He was the emperor of the world. That means everywhere. And so everybody was following the Vedic culture. They found a Vishnu deity in Russia. And some of the people in Russia, they say Russia means the place of the rishis. And Moscow is moksha. So they're telling me there's some places called Krishna's something, you know, like Krishna. They said, yeah, Rishis, it's the Rishis' place. And Prabhupada said the Caspian Ocean is named after Kashyapa Muni. Kashyap Muni.
They found deities of Lord Nisinga in China?
In China.
North Central China.
In Cambodia, they also found Rishi Temple, ancient Rishi Temple. In China, it was everywhere. I mean, the viticulture was everywhere, and we see remnants of it still in some places. Srila Prabhupada said that Ravana had a tunnel to Brazil because, to get gold.
You know, they've actually discovered
the tunnel.
Huge, what they consider mine, entrances to mines off the coast of South America.
Yeah.
And they don't have enough money to explore how deeply they go into the earth.
Yeah. Might go all the way to India, Sri Lanka, Ceylon. Yeah, they were, viticulture was everywhere. Although there were some mlechas, the Kaliyavana, he was fighting against Krishna, untouchable, mlecha. And they fought in the Battle of Kurukshetra, the Greeks, I mean the people from Europe, they were fighting. Everybody was in the Battle of Kurukshetra. It's described. It's described the time of Parashuram. Now, that was long ago, many billions of years ago. Then, because Parashuram was killing all the Kshatriyas, so many of them fled to Europe. And that became the Kshatriya. They're from the Kshatriya stock, Europeans. And they fled out of fear of Parashuram. Any other questions? Okay, I'll go to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.